You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the show, Eli Hoff from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch joins us to talk about this Arkansas-Missouri game. We'll also have Christina Long in studio. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Arkansas, Missouri on Saturday at 2:30 here in Fayetteville. We're joined now by Eli Hoff from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He covers the Tigers. Eli, what's the feeling up in Columbia about this game?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, Arkansas is a team that Missouri fans would like to see the Tigers go out and beat on a year-in, year-out basis. But I think there's a lot more angst, shall we say, over Eli Drinkwitz and his future as Missouri's head coach or his interest in other jobs. So it's a weird situation where I'm sure folks on Saturday will be plenty interested in the game, but there's also a lot of a big picture pondering happening up here.
Well, and it's the same here. It almost feels like in this game the result on the field is not nearly as important as maybe the bigger picture stuff that's being talked about around both of these programs.
Yeah, exactly, and that's interesting in its own right. Obviously, it might not help too much with the entertainment value on Saturday, but it does seem like that's where these two programs are. There's much more that I think will come out in the days following this game that will impact these programs than what actually happens on the field.
What's the feeling there at Missouri? Because, you know, like the last couple of years, whenever Missouri's played Arkansas, there's been a lot on the line, whether it be, you know, getting into a New Year's Six bowl game. Last year, I guess there was still kind of a little bit of an outside hope that if, you know, things fell right elsewhere, they could get into the playoff. I know that didn't happen. It's a different feeling this year with them being 7-4 and having the recent losses. Does it feel different going into the finale than it has the last couple of years?
Yeah, definitely. And this season, by and large, has felt a little different, right? There was still the same optimism for a lot of this season, but that pretty quickly trailed off once Mizzou started losing games there, picked up the third loss that bounced it from playoff contention, and then this past weekend picked up the fourth loss that will take away even the potential of a third 10-win season in a row. So that's one of the interesting things that I'll be looking for with this Mizzou team. It is just how they respond when there isn't as much on the line. I don't really have reason to believe it's an issue, but like you said, the last couple of years, we've seen Mizzou playing so many meaningful games in November, and this just we can't even pretend that this is up to the same level of stakes.
I watched the entire game last week against OU. It felt to me like Missouri really they left something on the field in terms of they controlled that game, at least in terms of time and possession. They were doing everything it felt like they wanted to do in the first half, and then OU gets the big play to Isaiah Stania. And I don't know that Missouri looked the same, but I wonder from your perspective, what did you think about that game and the fact that they only came away with 6 points with the way they had to move the ball?
Yeah, well, I think I'll start with the positive and then trail off from there. The Mizzou's defense continued to look really legit, which it has this season, and there's a big picture feeling that this is a college football playoff caliber defense that Mizzou has that is not being supported by the offense and all the special teams units. So that's been a source of frustration. The issue, as you could see against Oklahoma, which in its own right has a good defense, was just Mizzou's inability to score points. They had the ball for more than 12 minutes in the first quarter, only 3 points. And it felt for a long time there, like you said, Mizzou was able to run the ball a little early, was having a whole lot of possession, but just couldn't score. And it felt like Oklahoma could flip momentum on a dime and take control. That's exactly what happened, and Mizzou just didn't have enough of an offense in the second half to really find a foothold there, which has been the point of struggle at other points this season.
Of course, Bo Perbula had been out, but what does he add to the offense now that he's back, or is it a whole lot different between him and Zollers?
It is a little bit. Zollers is more of a pocket passer, whereas Perbula is going to run more. The way I frame it is that Perbula's best weapon is his legs. Zollers' best weapon is his arm. Both are mobile. Both can escape. Both can make some of the throws. But Perbula is going to be a little bit more mobile. Now, of course, a lot of that was before he dislocated his ankle a month ago against Vanderbilt. He looked pretty good coming back against Oklahoma, maybe a little more reluctant to run. And some of that might be the team asking him not to run given that. So it seems like he's back and healthy, but But in some of the downfield throws are hit or miss with Pribula. He's thrown a pretty good chunk of interceptions this season, so we'll see how some of that looks. But he is someone who will look to escape when he can.
Ahmad Hardy's having a big year there. I mean, I put him on my All-America ballot this week. 1,400 yards that he's got, 15 touchdowns. He had that 300-yard game against Mississippi State a little over a week ago. What is it about Eli Drinkwitz and his staff being able to go out and find these running backs that seems like maybe nobody else knows about and then plug them into a system that makes them have a lot of success there?
Yeah, it's something here. I think Curtis Looper, the running backs coach, deserves a lot of credit for finding these guys and developing them and coaching them up. Mizzou also has Jamal Roberts, who's the secondary back this year, who I think could, if he was the workhorse back, could also be putting up really, really good numbers. But Hardy's just fantastic with the way he's able to break tackles and dodge contact. Some of what Mizzou does is just a lot of outside zone. That's the biggest offensive staple here, more than any pass scheme, any other run scheme. It's a whole lot of outside zone. And Hardy's someone who was running that a lot down at Louisiana Monroe, where he played last year. So Eli Drinkwitz was able to call up the coach there and kind of actually get the blessing from ULM to go after Hardy in the portal. That helped there. And then he's been familiar with the system as soon as he got on campus.
Of course, Cody Schrader had the big year 2 years ago. It seems like maybe they've got a good eye for evaluating something that other teams don't see.
Yeah, I think so. And Cody Schrader was interesting because he kind of emerged as the year went on. They thought that was going to be a running back tandem. And then he winds up leading the SEC in rushing yards and setting the school record. 2 years before that, in 2021, it was Tyler Beatty here. So every other year, it seems like Mizzou has a running back who sets the school record and leads the SEC in rushing yards. So, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's some cycle of the sun or something, but Mizzou's got it figured out.
With Drinkwitz and these other jobs, I mean, how legit do you think the threat is that he might go somewhere else?
Yeah, it the level of threat kind of changes day to day. Some days I'll feel like, oh, he's definitely staying. Some days I'll be like, maybe not. The weird thing with him is that it seems like right now, as we're talking before these last games, he's number two on a lot of places lists when you look at LSU, Florida, Auburn, Penn State. And of course, some of the reporting from those different places will vary day to day and such. But I'm still not sure which of those opportunities will actually turn into a concrete offer where he is number one on their list and they're coming to him, you know, with a, hey, you're our guy. I do think there's a pretty high probability that happens. And he has not shut this down. You know, he's talked about he loves it at Mizzou. He's talked about he doesn't like the distractions, all that stuff. He has not said, I'm staying at Mizzou for 2026. He has not signed an extension or really given any concrete commitment to next year, which, of course, a lot of these coaches choose not to do. They want to his stock is as high as it's ever been. He wants to see that process play out. So at this point, certainly not a guarantee that he'll be back. I think we'll have to see. I think Sunday will be an interesting day once the Lane Kiffin domino falls, however that may go, and then that will probably have a pretty big impact on Drink's opportunities.
I think what he's done at Missouri is pretty remarkable. Not only just the fact that he's winning at the level he is. I think if they were to win out and win a bowl game, you're talking about 30 wins over 3 years. That's a big number. But then also the fact that it felt like early in 23 there were some people kind of ready to run him out of town, right? And they've really righted the ship to where now, you know, if he was being courted 3 years ago, I think that maybe the level of concern about him leaving Missouri would be different than it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the 23 season, he had a losing record at Missouri through his first 3 years in Columbia. And then, of course, has won a whole lot of games since then. So it really has been maybe not a complete 180, but pretty darn close to a 180 from what he was between 2020 and 2022. And then between 2023 to now, it is remarkable.
Of course, he grew up down the road here, down in Alma, about 40 miles from Fayetteville. I think I've heard or read, doesn't he have family that even wears Razorback clothes to the games whenever Arkansas and Missouri plays? How much do you think this game means to him? Because you try to win every game, but it just seems like maybe this one means a little extra.
Yeah, I think it definitely does to him because of where he grew up. And even his he went to Arkansas State. His first job was coaching high school up at Springdale. So he even knows Northwest Arkansas pretty well. So I think he is someone who this tends to mean a little bit more to from that standpoint. Mizzou doesn't have as many Arkansas players. Of course, Courtney Crutchfield, who was one of them, is down with the Razorbacks this year. So we'll see how much it kind of means to the players. But from a coaching standpoint, absolutely.
From a receiving standpoint, you know, Luther Burden's gone, and the passing game hasn't been nearly as good. Is it a matter of a different quarterback? Is it a matter of quarterback? Is it a matter of receiver? Is there something going on with the offensive line? Maybe a byproduct of all of that, because the passing game has been really strong at Missouri the last couple of years.
Yeah, this is something that those of us who follow this program are all kind of trying to piece together. And I think the post-mortem on this season will be interesting, because it feels like the passing attack hasn't coalesced the way it could or should. Mizzou's a team that, when it's at its best, it's predominantly running the ball. But, of course, that means you still need to throw it. So some of that is Prabilla, who's arm is not what Brady Cook's arm was. So there's been a little bit of a step back there. The offensive line has definitely taken a step back. There was a late reshuffling of things in fall camp that brought Caden Green, the preseason All-American at left guard, bumped him out to left tackle because Mizzou didn't feel like they had a left tackle that was up to par. And then that opened up a hole at right guard. Like there's just been some stuff along the offensive line. Some of the receivers, there's been a few bad drops as the year's gone on. And then there's been some criticism of the play calling here at Missouri this year. Even from Coach Drink has talked about some of the offense feeling a little predictable at times or lacking creativity. And again, I think that's something that there'll be a little more candor about once the season's over, but it does feel like there's been a degree of frustration with the passing game at large.
31 sacks from Missouri this year. That's 15th nationally. As I look at their defensive stats, that's what really jumps off the page to me. Is that the strength of the defense, the pass rush?
Yeah, definitely. Just that whole defensive front is really, really strong. When you look at Damon Wilson II and Zion Young, who are the two DNs and lead the team in sacks, pressures, all of that stuff, I'm not sure if there are many defensive end pairings that are better than that duo in the country. Chris McClellan has really come on recently as a D tackle. He's a fourth-year guy who's really settled in there. But the player I think folks will notice the most on Saturday is Josiah Trotter, middle linebacker. He wears 40, which is an awesome linebacker number. You know that's going to be a hard-hitting guy. He just flies around, and he's interesting. His brother plays for the Eagles right now, just won a Super Bowl. His dad is in the Eagles Ring of Honor, and they're both linebackers. So he comes from a family where if they play a Thanksgiving football game, I think everybody just wants to be on defense and wants to hit. And so he's got a degree of just linebacker instincts that really show up, and he's been a ton of fun to watch.
While we've been talking here, they just put out the Doak Walker Award finalist. Ahmad Hardy is one of them. The others are Kewan Lacy and Jeremiah Love. Arkansas is luck. They played all three of those this year. Eli, appreciate your time, and we'll see you on Saturday here in Fayetteville.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. Appreciate it. Eli Hoff of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. When we come back, Christina Long will join me here in studio. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Christina Long is in studio with me. So it's Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday. Yeah, it's Tuesday. Thanksgiving's in 2 days. So, you know, there was a report. I think Brandon Marcello is the one who said this on Sunday, that the coaching, it was framed in a very kind of ambiguous way, but basically we may know more about the coaching search within 48 hours. It feels like you just sit back and you think about everything that's going on. When does this get announced? And this is assuming they've made a decision. Of course, we've talked about this. They've kept, you know, their cards close to the vest and everything. But holiday in 2 days. You got a lot of teams that are gearing up for a game this weekend. You know, maybe I'm making a mistake saying this, and when we get off of here in 10 minutes, we're going to get an alert that says they've hired somebody. It just feels to me like we're kind of getting to the point that if it hasn't happened by now, I don't know that it's going to happen until after the games this weekend.
That's what I think. And that's kind of what I have thought. I mean, I just don't see, unless you were hiring somebody who is not currently coaching a team, which is possible. I mean, we talked about how they've talked to some guys that aren't currently coaching or could be interested in some guys that aren't currently coaching. Unless you were hiring one of those, I just don't see a reason to announce it before that. I just don't get it. Like we talked about yesterday, I don't know why any coach currently coaching a team, whether they have postseason ambitions or not, would want that out there before. Now, obviously, we talked yesterday about how leaks happen. Sure. Mm-hmm. A lot of times leaks come from agents, and I would assume an agent representing a coach is going to do what the coach wants and wait to put that out there. Still, there's, you know, sometimes somebody hears something from somebody else who's not an agent, who's not an athletic director. You know, it comes from a less sort of official place and something that wasn't really supposed to get out. And so you can have that happen. But as far as an announcement or a more official sort of strategic leak, mm-hmm. I never understood what the reason would be to do it before this last week of games. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I think there's a lot of people who, they see Virginia Tech hired James Franklin, and again,
he didn't have a job.
He didn't have a job. That's 100% true. They see it as Arkansas hasn't made an announcement here, so something must be going wrong. I don't think anything's going wrong.
That's how coaching searches have always worked.
I don't necessarily think that they're panicking. You know what I mean? I just think that they're kind of waiting for the process to play out. And honestly, the process is going to play out earlier this year, like we talked about yesterday, because of the signing period and how it's earlier this season, or, you know, this year, this December. And so really everything is sped up a little bit relative to where it usually is. I just think we got to get through this weekend. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in 10 minutes, we pivot and we quit doing predictions.
That would be annoying.
We talk about coach. coach such and such, but it just seems like, you know, patience. Mm-hmm. And we knew patience was going to have to be in large doses when they fired Pittman on September 28th. And we knew it was probably going to be at least 2 months before there was a new coach in place.
Yeah, I don't find that surprising. I don't think it's an indicator of a search that's not going well. I think that's, like I said, very normal. I mean, there's been, I think coaches, because there have been times that a coach has, you know, it's been found out. Like, did you tell me Jimbo Fisher? Wasn't that before when he left Florida State? Wasn't that before Florida State?
He left, yeah, they played ULM on a Saturday night, and I think it was either the next day or the day after. He took the A&M job,
yeah,
and so Florida State actually had two. There were interim coaches on both sidelines because that was the year I think McElwain got fired at Florida.
Didn't
so
we just write a whole thing about how there's never been SEC
there had never been an SEC versus SEC.
Oh,
game.
Duh,
yeah, that was it.
But anyway, so you know that is the exception, not the rule. That doesn't mean like that's not what normally happens. Like this is nothing about them waiting or not having an announcement this week or within the 48 hours of what everybody was saying. Nothing about that to me says, oh, they don't have it together. I think it's very possible. And this is, you know, this is speculation. I'm not basing this off of like insider info, just to be clear about that. I think it's certainly possible that they have kind of a verbal agreement and they're hashing out details. Or maybe, you know, they're just waiting to kind of put pen to paper until after Saturday's games or right before or whatever. And then, yeah, this gets out after this weekend's games. I think that's super normal, and I think that's possible. I don't necessarily think it's they haven't made a decision yet or they don't know who they want yet. I'm sure out of the people that we think they're kind of down to, they have an idea of who the front runner is, and maybe they've extended a more formal offer. I don't know. But I don't think that this – just because we don't have an announcement or a leak or whatever doesn't mean that they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that – I agree with you. I've wondered too, and again, this is all hypothetical speaking, but with the now with the way the calendar works and you potentially have to get somebody in place within like a day of the regular season ending in order to have any chance to salvage something of a signing class. I wonder if instead of verbal agreements, because those can change.
Mm-hmm. Nothing means anything until you have it signed.
And I'm not talking about necessarily at Arkansas. I'm just thinking, I wonder if any of these colleges, are you able to sign someone with like an NDA that says, okay, this is all done.
Maybe.
This is all done, but we're not going to disclose it until this date. I don't know.
I know who I can ask.
I think everything, Christina, that we know about coaching searches, we have to rethink it now because it's so different. I mean, it's so different in terms of all the teams that are firing their coaches in season. It's different because of the signing period being when it is. I just think that this, it's hard to look at this coaching search and maybe go back to the last time Arkansas hired a coach in 2019 and try to really draw any parallels from that to what exists this year, just because things are so much different.
Yeah, it really is. And it just keeps changing. And, you know, then you have a situation like what is going on with Lane Kiffin that kind of feels like it changes sort of how we talk about these things. Or, you know, a lot of, you know what I'm so glad of? I'm so glad that Arkansas is seemingly not that affected by whatever Kiffin decides to do. Because it feels like all the other SEC openings are directly impacted by what he decides to do. And Arkansas seems to be not involved in that at all.
You think Auburn is even impacted by it?
Well, yeah, because Auburn, it seems, is pretty clear, wants John Summerall. If Kiffin leaves Ole Miss, you know? So that's, I think that's kind of the idea there.
That's a weird deal.
Yeah.
They're supposed to have some sort of, what would you call it, resolution to what's going on at Ole Miss by the weekend.
Told deadlines before.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Lane Kiffin, you know, do you really have to abide by that Saturday deadline?
What are they going
to
do? Fire you?
But yeah, I mean, it's
there's nothing they can. I mean, I think with that, and the same thing with, you know, last week when we were hearing that the search was wrapping up, it's like, of course it's wrapping up. So is the season. That's when these things are happening. So it's like, yeah, of course he's probably going to make his decision after the Egg Bowl. That's when the regular season's over. What are you talking about? So I guess maybe with that, it's like we're not going to know before kind of thing. But the 48-hour idea, I kind of wonder, and again, this is me just thinking, this is not something anybody's told me. Do you think it's possible that came from, like, maybe they made a decision or they offered somebody or they got a verbal agreement around that within that 48-hour period? And there was the idea that we might find out about it, but we're not going to?
I have no idea.
That's kind of where my mind goes. It's like, maybe it was
this is just, you know, I don't mean this toward anybody in particular. I just think anybody who's saying right now that I know what's going on, I don't think they're telling you, either they're not telling you the truth or they are misinformed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the people who truly know what is going on, I think that circle is really, really small.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know what's going on, because I don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's Juracek. He's played this as close to the vest as any coaching search he's ever had. I got some ideas about what I think might be going on. I think I could probably draw some educated guesses, you know, based on some things that I know, based on the past searches that he's had. I'm going to guess that they're in the process, if they haven't already done this, of doing some face-to-face interviews with people. And that's kind of the last step. That's the last hurdle. You do the face-to-face interviews, and then you offer the job, and then, you know, you have the press conference, and away we go. But I think there's a lot of misinformation out there right now, because there are too many people who want to be first. And I think that sometimes when that's the case, there's a lot of half-truths.
And I don't think it's intentional. Like, I don't think I don't think anybody is like, I'm going to put this fake stuff out there.
Yeah.
I think
there are some people who like
to do that.
There's
some online personalities that like to do that. I'm talking about like people, like credentialed media. Like, I don't think anybody that you know, that kind of person is intentionally misleading anybody. But like you said, the people that are talking to them might be wrong. You
know? I have people that I trust that I talk to who've been duped during this.
Yeah.
Just because, again, the circle of trust, so to speak, is really tight. And I'll leave it at that. All right, moving on. We talked to Eli Hoff about Arkansas, Missouri. Real quick, just a thought on this game this weekend. A game that I don't know. This is year number 21 for me, covering Razorback football. I cannot think of another game, even FCS games, where people have cared less about the result on the field. They are it's like, oh, there's a game. Okay, I might tune in and see what's going on there.
Yeah.
Like, the interest level in this game is as low as I think I have ever seen. I think it's supposed to be rainy. I think it's supposed to be pretty cold on Saturday.
That stinks.
I know there's a chance of rain on Saturday at some point. It's going to be cold. You know, you're going to have people out in the woods. You're going to have people at families. You're going to have people on the road traveling, you know, holidays. I really wonder what that scene is going to look like in the stadium Saturday. I mean, are we looking at maybe a game where there's 25,000 people there? I wouldn't be surprised by it.
Yeah, I don't blame people for it. I don't blame people if they don't want to go.
Like, the interest in this game is just so incredibly low, to the point that I can't think of another game that was like this. Maybe the Missouri game at War Memorial in 2019, but I might even say that this one feels lower than that one.
Yeah, it's not a particularly exciting, especially because, honestly, from both sides of this, like, Missouri people are worried about if Eli Drinkwitz is going to be their coach this year. You know, there's two different kinds of coach anxiety going into this game on either side. But yeah, I mean, I think Missouri's going to win. I don't think that's a bold take. I again come back to, this is a winnable game. What reason do I have to believe that this is, what has Arkansas shown me to make me think this is going to be the time that they do it? Especially considering the way Missouri has just owned them in, you know, since joining the SEC. Even in years when it looked like Missouri was the worst team, it just keeps happening. You know, I don't think Missouri, like we saw last week, Oklahoma was able to limit the run game a little bit, which has been really hard to do. Oklahoma has one of the SEC's best defenses.
They're phenomenal.
Arkansas definitely does not have that.
They've got the best defensive line in the country, maybe.
Yeah, and so, you know, they were able to limit the run game and kind of force Bo Prabula to throw more, and he didn't, you know, he threw two picks and they didn't score a touchdown. Not ideal. I don't think Arkansas is going to be able to put on that kind of defensive performance. Maybe it gets messy. Maybe the rain changes things. I don't see any reason why that should work particularly in Arkansas's favor. I don't know. I don't have any reason to think Arkansas is going to pull this one off. Besides the fact that, you know, Missouri is, they've played better teams than Missouri and they've had close games and whatever. But, I mean, it's winnable. Doesn't mean they're going to win it.
All right, let's look around the rest of the SEC. This is a fun weekend because you've got three really entertaining games on Saturday. It starts at 11 a.m. on ABC. It's the Egg Bowl. Ole Miss 10-1. Mississippi State trying to get to bowl eligibility. They're 5-6. Ole Miss is a 7.5-point favorite. The efficiency ratings like Ole Miss here.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's hard to pick Mississippi State in this game just because of what Ole Miss has been. You know, Mississippi State's a lot better than they were a year ago, but they're still not great. You know, they've won one SEC game and it was Arkansas. So I think it's pretty easy and comfortable to pick Ole Miss here. I mean, you can say what you want about Ole Miss having off-field drama and concern, and that is that going to leak through? I don't think, even if it did, I don't know if it would matter much.
This is one of those games, and I think Ole Miss is going to win too, but this is one of those games where, I mean, it has been all kinds of unpredictable throughout the years.
So
it's in Starkville, like you said, Ole Miss. They've had a week for Lane Kiffin to go party in Baton Rouge and do everything else that's going on. I wouldn't be surprised to see, and with everything that's on the line for Ole Miss, first time that they could potentially get to the playoff, I would not be surprised to see some stiffness out of them and that this be a game that's in question in the fourth quarter. But I think Ole Miss is better. I think they win. But that's what's fun about rivalry week is that you don't ever really know. 2:30 on Friday, Georgia goes to Georgia Tech. 3 weeks ago, we thought this could be a blockbuster game. It still is a really big game, but Georgia Tech's lost a couple of games now here in the last month. Georgia's 10-1. Georgia Tech is 9-2. Georgia is a 14.5-point favorite. The efficiency ratings like Georgia to win this game. This is a weird one because Georgia Tech is the home team, but they moved this game out of Bobby Dodd Stadium across town over to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and we all know that every time the lights come on in that stadium and Georgia is involved, that place turns red. They're whooping.
Georgia Tech's home stadium has done that in recent years.
So this is weird for Georgia Tech, I think, to have done this because, I mean, it may have been a pro-Georgia crowd anyway if it was on Georgia Tech's campus, but now this is going to feel like more of a neutral site game than I think it's going to a Georgia Tech home game.
Yeah, I'm surprised the spread is this big. I mean, I think Georgia will win. I want Georgia Tech to win just because I really like Georgia Tech. I like the way they play. I like Haynes King a lot. I think he's just super fun. I like their coach. I just like everything about them, so I would like to see them win. But I think Georgia is going to. I'm surprised that it's 14.
Well, if you look at what Georgia Tech's done in the last few weeks, though, I think that's, I mean, they did not look very good against Pitt. I think against Boston College.
The game was, I couldn't believe, yeah.
Against BC, they were down quite a bit, and they came back and and they won. I think Georgia's playing maybe better than any team in the SEC right now. And if they win this game, let me pull up the scenarios here. I had them a little bit earlier today. The SEC clinching scenarios in terms of getting into the SEC championship game, this is what they look like this week. If Alabama wins, it is in the SEC championship game. If Texas A&M wins, it is in the championship game. And then if there are other results, there's all kinds of weird things. Georgia could get in with an Alabama loss or a Texas A&M loss. Alabama cannot get in with a loss to Auburn. Ole Miss could get in with an Alabama loss and a Texas A&M loss. And then A&M could get in with either an Alabama loss, or I'm sorry, with an Alabama loss and an Ole Miss loss. So I know that probably has your
I'm not going to remember any of that.
No, just easiest way to remember this is if Alabama wins and A&M wins this weekend, that's the SEC championship game.
I didn't realize that, so I'm glad.
And I think that's probably the most likely scenario. I mean, like for Georgia to get in, it's Alabama has to lose or Texas A&M has to lose. So maybe, you know, maybe what happens in Austin. But there you go. There's your SEC championship game scenario. I think Georgia beats Georgia Tech, by the way. Yeah. I think they're just really good. Mentioned A&M Texas Friday night, 6:30 on ABC. A&M's a 2.5-point favorite. The efficiency rating's like A&M 2. Texas, I know there's a lot of people talking about they took advantage of Arkansas's defense. And there's some truth to that. But you know, I've been reading some scouts' takes about Arch Manning, and basically they are really impressed with the steps that he's taken from, you know, like maybe week three to where he is now. And they're not looking at numbers, guys. I mean, they're looking at, like, the throws.
Execution
and
and
the decision-making and the footwork and things like that. And he's really gotten a lot better. They get A&M at home. First time they played A&M at home in a long time. This is a really interesting game Saturday night.
Yeah,
or Friday night.
Who do I think is going to win this one? I guess I think Texas A&M. I guess I think Texas A&M.
A&M has a history of just laying a dud when they're in this position. I think they're going to get in the playoff regardless, but this would be the most A&M thing to do, to get to 11-0 and then not be able to finish out an undefeated regular season and have it happen to Texas.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I'm going to pick Texas A&M, like, put me down for that, but I'm not confident.
I'm on the fence. You know, A&M's defense has been really susceptible at times this year.
Yeah.
It happened against Arkansas, happened against Notre Dame, happened against South Carolina in the first half. I think A&M, I'm going to pick A&M because I think that there is a better chance. Let's put it this way. If A&M plays its game, I like its game better than I like Texas A game. So if they both come out, they play well, give me A&M, but I'm not going to be surprised if they go in and lose that game. But I think Texas A&M probably wins, and I think the SEC championship game is probably A&M and Alabama next week. Okay, moving ahead.
Saturday, there's a lot of games Saturday. We'll go through them here. How about this one, Christina? You've covered this one before. Clemson goes to South Carolina. South Carolina can't make a bowl game, so this is kind of their bowl game. Try to run Clemson season a little bit more. Clemson, they are bowl eligible, but this is – I was surprised to see that South Carolina is a 2.5-point favorite in this game.
Same.
The ratings like Clemson by a lot.
Interesting. And they're usually – your ratings usually play pretty conservatively.
Let me tell you, I had to go through some numbers because I don't track ACC teams.
Yeah.
I spent a long time this week going back and looking through a bunch of ACC box scores to see what they would like in these games.
Right. I'm also picking Clemson here. This is such an interesting, this sets up as such an interesting game in this rivalry because obviously this is a very intense rivalry, but you know, these are two teams that did not at all have the seasons that they thought they were going to. And, you know, I don't know how often that really happens in over the course of this rivalry, I guess in the last decade or so. So, you know, it's interesting, but I do think Clemson wins. I don't know. I think I like Clemson's offense better than I like South Carolina's. Which I think is what gives me a little bit more confidence in them.
I like Clemson's defense, too.
Yeah. It hasn't been as good as I thought it was going to be, but it's been...
But they've still got guys.
Yeah,
and that's the
do.
Whole thing. It's like, this is why I picked LSU a couple of weeks ago. I said that LSU, they've got NFL players all over the field. And if they ever just put it together for an afternoon, that can be really scary for the opponent. I think the same thing is true with Clemson. All those defensive linemen they have, linebackers, they got NFL guys all over the field.
South Carolina's offense has been so bad. It feels like if South Carolina is going to have to win this game, they're going to have to win it with Beamer ball, you know, get a special teams touchdown,
possible, but...
get a defensive score, something like that. I like Clemson to win this game. Another in-state showdown, Kentucky trying to get to bowl eligibility. They're 5-6, 7-4 Louisville. Louisville's a 2.5-point favorite, and the efficiency ratings like Louisville to win, too.
I just kind of keep going chalk here, but I'm definitely more confident in Louisville than I am in Kentucky.
Well, they're the home team. Kentucky is like in this really weird wave trying to track them. I thought that they were improving for about 3 or 4 weeks. They had played pretty good football, even the game where they lost to Texas in overtime. And then they come out against Vanderbilt last week, and they just got slapped around. And I think Vanderbilt's a good team. I really do. But, I can't get a feel for what's going on with Kentucky. Louisville, kind of the same thing. You know, they were
They looked really good.
They were in the driver's seat to get to the ACC championship game, and now they've lost, I think, 2 or 3 in a row. Weird game there. I'll go with Louisville just because they are at home. Another interesting game, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, top 25 matchup in Knoxville this weekend. Vanderbilt 9-2, Tennessee 8-3. Vols are a 3.5-point favorite. Efficiency ratings like Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's back to number one in the SEC in efficiency ratings, by the way. There's something about them. They don't get blown out, and they blow some teams out, and they play really good, efficient ball control offense where they don't have a whole lot of possessions, but they do pretty well with the possessions they have. Like, I think last week against Kentucky, it was 10 possessions, 45 points. Defensively, 11 possessions, 17 points allowed. This is one of those games for Vanderbilt where you got to win and then hope that some chaos ensues around you. They're 14th going into the CFP rankings that are going to be updated tonight.
Yeah, I like Vanderbilt here just because of Tennessee's defense concerns me. Like, you know, obviously it hasn't hampered them too much so far. They've only lost 3 games, but I just don't see it here. I think Vanderbilt, and also part of it is I just want it for Vanderbilt just because we've talked so many times on this show about how much fun, you know, what a fun story they are, and how it's so cool to watch them have this kind of success. So I want it for Vanderbilt. And I also do kind of, I think I like the matchup here with Diego Pavia and their offense against Tennessee's defense.
I struggle with this being a logo game where I see Vanderbilt's logo and I still...
It's hard. We've been fighting that all year.
I still have the old Vanderbilt feelings there, and I see Tennessee's logo. I think Tennessee wins the game. I think Vanderbilt, maybe you're right. Maybe they're able to move the ball quite a bit against Tennessee defensively, but Tennessee's defense has been getting a little bit better here in recent weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They've still got that over-the-top threat that I think with could be very difficult for Vanderbilt to defend. So the fact they're at home... And the fact that Vanderbilt as a program has never really been in this position before, it makes me a little bit hesitant to pick Vanderbilt. So I'm going to go Tennessee wins this game. Even though the efficiency ratings, I trust them like a brother.
They've been wrong, how many times? Only
like 8 times this year.
That's not too bad.
No, out of a lot of games. Let's see here. Moving on.
We'll LSU, Oklahoma?
Well, we'll get to the Iron Bowl here in a minute. How about LSU, Oklahoma? Yeah, good call. OU 9-2, LSU 7-4. OU's a 10.5-point favorite in this game. The efficiency rating's like OU, too.
Yeah, I mean, so do I. I just have a hard time looking at LSU and thinking that they're going to be able to do it here. I like Oklahoma. Like we talked about, their defense has been so good. LSU's offense has been very hit or miss. I think Oklahoma wins. I don't think it's a challenging pick.
OU has jumped. They have jumped over Vanderbilt for a playoff spot. Because if you would have asked me a month ago, I would have said that I thought Vanderbilt had a much better chance to go to the playoff than I thought OU did. This is a play-in game for Oklahoma. They're at home. They're in Norman. Their offense sucks, but their defense and their special teams are so good. I mean, like, it's, you know, you keep waiting. Okay, this is going to be the week where the offense doesn't hurt them. Have you seen LSU's offense against that OU defense? That could be a really long day. I think OU wins this, too. That's going to be on ABC at 2:30 Saturday, 3:30 on ESPN2, Florida State and Florida. Wow.
This is the crap ball of the week.
Man, I remember when I was a kid, this was the game that you always waited around for. You know, it was Danny Warfel and Ike Hilliard and Peter Warwick and Warwick Dunn. And now it's, I don't know any of these players. Florida State, they're 5-6. They can get to a bowl with a win in Gainesville on Saturday. Florida, 3-8. They can't do anything. Again, one of these betting lines I was a little bit surprised by. Florida, a 1.5-point favorite in this game, when the efficiency ratings like Florida State better, like by quite a bit.
By a lot.
Honestly. Florida State just announced that Mike Norvell is going to be back next year, too. I wonder if, I mean, certainly I don't think Florida State, number one, I don't think they wanted to get into the buyout game because his buyout is so much. Number two, this is such a crowded market. Number three, I wonder if they wonder by saying, hey, he's going to be back, if that helps the team play a little bit looser and get to a bowl game.
Maybe, yeah. This is, I don't actually know who I want to pick here because I just have no faith in either of these teams. Maybe, I guess I'll go Florida. Mainly because I picked the higher ranked or the team with more wins in all.
This is one of those games where you want to pick the refs, right?
Yes, for real. This is a tough one. I don't know. I just, you know, Florida State's probably played a little bit better, but I don't know. This one's going to be ugly. I'm excited to watch it because I love mess.
I got Florida State. I think Florida State wins. Florida's played terrible. Terribly. Yeah. Look what Kentucky did to them. Look what Tennessee did to them last week. I mean, neither of those games were anywhere near competitive. I think Florida State wins that one, maybe by quite a bit. And then one more before we get to Arkansas, Missouri, the Iron Bowl Saturday night. They have cleared the runway for the Iron Bowl to be the only SEC game on television. Arkansas, Missouri was supposed to be a night game. They called and they said, hey, we want you to move your game to the afternoon. They said, all right, you know, that's what you do whenever ESPN calls. When they own you, the way ESPN owns the teams in the SEC. So now you got the Iron Bowl, 6:30 on Saturday night. It's going to be on ABC. Bama's 9-2. If they win, like we said, they're going to the SEC championship game. But I think if they win, too, they're probably safe in the playoff. That's going to be one of the really interesting things to watch, by the way, is last year, okay, there was a precedent that was set in year one with SMU losing in the ACC championship game, but still getting an at-large spot, basically not punishing them for losing an extra game that not everybody had to play. Does that happen this year? Not just with Alabama, but there are going to be some other teams that are going to be in that boat too. But Bama 9-2, Auburn 5-6, they can get to a bowl. Alabama's a 6.5-point favorite in the ratings like Alabama.
Yeah, I like Alabama too. I think this is similar to the Texas and Texas A&M game. It's one of those where it's like, I could see it would be so, you know, not necessarily likely, but it would be, it's so narratively interesting, the idea that Auburn could spoil things for Alabama in this spot. But I don't think I'm ready to commit to saying that I think Auburn can or that Auburn will. I guess I think it's possible. I don't think that this will necessarily be a blowout. But I do think Alabama will be able to take care of business.
You see, Kane Wilmot got asked about the Arkansas job yesterday during his press conference.
Basically no comment, which that was exactly what I was expecting to do.
A very long no comment. Yeah. I appreciate it. A very friendly no comment.
Yes.
I appreciate the question, but something.
Yeah.
So that might be kind of interesting to watch this week with his name being linked to the Arkansas job and the reports. Auburn's defense is really good. I think they could slow Alabama down. Alabama's defense, overall, they're good. They are a very – I heard somebody explain this about Womack within the last few weeks. Basically, it's just get to the next play. Even if you give up a 50-yard run, get the guy down and get to the next play. Remember what happened against Tennessee on the goal line? It's just get to the next play and maybe something will happen. So they're not great against the run. They've been better against the pass. I don't know that Auburn does one any better than the other. But I just think Alabama – I know that the game, when it goes to Auburn, sometimes can get a little weird, but I think Bama's probably focused and locked in. And
you
know, what happened a couple of weeks ago with the OU loss, sometimes that's not a bad thing. They can get you refocused and reset here on the stretch run. I think they beat Auburn on Saturday, and Auburn fails to go to a bowl game. And then finally, Arkansas and Missouri. Missouri's 7-4, Arkansas 2-9. Missouri's a 2.5-point favorite. The efficiency ratings like Missouri by 5. This feels like the game to me, Christina, where they just turn around and they give it to Ahmad Hardy, you know, maybe 25, 30 times like they did against Mississippi State a couple of weeks ago and say, show us what you got. It feels like a bad matchup for Arkansas.
Definitely. 100%. I mean, they've had a really hard time in run defense for most of the year. I think he could have another opportunity. Ahmad Hardy could have another opportunity for a really big game. You know, I don't think Arkansas, you know, we'll see what Arkansas's offense can do.
Get this quarterback question that I think is fascinating. And honestly, I don't think you as a team want to have a quarterback question going into a game. That never seems to go well, right? Like when teams play two quarterbacks, the old saying is you got two, you don't have any.
Yeah.
But also when you've got that question going into a game, I just feel like it's a recipe
for a question. It really is though. Like, I kind of wonder if we're actually just seeing kind of gamesmanship and like, oh, who's it going to be? And
it does seem
they're
hard.
They're going to roll Talen Green out there.
It does seem hard to me to believe that Talen Green, who has had statistically, you know, he's going to be up there in some of the school record book type stuff. It's hard for me to believe that this is his last college game. This is his last game with the Razorbacks and they wouldn't play him.
It just
but,
seems
can
in
I
a
say,
lost season.
Can I add a but?
Yeah.
2008. Casey Dick, going into his last game, they started his brother over him, and Nathan Dick ends up getting knocked out in that game. Casey ends up going out there, bringing the team back, and beating LSU in the second miracle on Markham. So we've seen Petrino do this before. Now, that's a different scenario. You know, that's his first year versus being an interim year now, but I think he's truly, I don't know that the whole, this is his last game, that type of stuff, I don't know that that
And
registers in his mind the way that it would others.
I know. I feel a little bit like, okay, even if you think, even if you're like actually worried about the prospect of, you know, Talen, of if you start Talen at that, like making you lose the game, I come a little at it a little bit from like a what do you have to lose?
Yeah.
But I don't think that's how like actual football coaches approach this. Like, I reckon, I do not think that they are uncompetitive in that way. I don't think Bobby Petrino thinks that way. But to me, it's like, come on, just start the guy. Maybe you have a short leash. Maybe he throws a pick and you take him out. I don't know, but I was wondering yesterday when they said, when Bobby Petrino said, you know, we'll see who we're going to start. We're not going to tell you, basically. I kind of wondered how much of that was just to kind of give Missouri some anxiety and make them do a little extra work.
It'll be an empty stadium.
Yes.
A very empty stadium. I feel like, I just don't know how, if you're the home team, you get the energy off that home crowd. It's, you got a potential to be lethargic. It's senior day. There's a lot of emotions that go into that. I think that a lot of this, not to mention, I think Missouri's a better team. I just think there's a lot that plays into Missouri's favor on Saturday, and I think that they will win. All right, this is going to be our last traditional podcast of the week. We are going to have something kind of special for you tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that. But we'll be back on Monday to talk about Razorback football. Who knows what we may know by then? Hopefully we know a lot. Razorback basketball at Duke on Thursday. We'll certainly have a lot to talk about from that. Hope you all have a great Thanksgiving wherever you are. Be safe out on the highways, and we'll see you back here in 6 days.